Session is in full swing at the state legislature, but not every bill is new. Many of them are things we've seen before.
It happens all the time. A proposal gets voted down, it's back in front of lawmakers the next year.
A bill gets tossed out, and then it comes right back, like a boomerang.
Boomerang bills?
Boomerang bills.
Boomerang bills.
Boomerang bills.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White. Let's talk about boomerang bills.
Boomerang bills.
Boomerang bills.
So what are some bills that are boomerang bills? What's a boomerang bill?
Well, boomerang bill, I think, is self-explanatory, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's we just said it in the intro. Do we really need to say more?
The core concept?
Yeah.
It gets introduced. It gets voted down. It comes back. It's like a bad penny.
It's like the legend. Whoa, bad pennies. Like, it's a little more judgmental than we want to get here. Because we're not saying whether these bills are bad, right?
Right. They could die for a variety of reasons.
They could. I just picture that legislator throwing that bill out there like, this could be the time. Throw it out there and like, whoops, it's back, you know? It didn't work. It came right back to me. And I think a great example this week was high-capacity wells.
All right.
Those high-capacity wells.
This thing well, is, you don't say.
It's a deep subject. arf. But this one's been around. I mean, I think this is an example of an issue that is a difficult issue. The reason that we've heard from it a lot and very energized constituencies on both sides of this one. Wouldn't you say, Laurel, was this your first high-capacity wells hearing?
It was, and I have to say I was very struck by the amount of engagement at this hearing. I walked down, it started right at 9, and I walked down and there is a crowd like winding down the hallway outside the committee room on bolts. This is a big committee room. And
would you say it's overflowing?
It is overflowing. People were really into it. There was an overflow into the hallways, as I said. They talked about setting up an overflow room where they would stream the hearing. Where people
they were going to stream the hearing?
They were going to stream it. We need like a symbol in here. Like ching.
I think we need shock treatment every time. Because this is some low-hanging fruit here.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
You get a shock every time. I would have gotten one by now.
But, yeah, I don't know if they actually set up the overflow room. But there were dozens of people for this hearing that started at 9, and they put a cap on it at 6.
They put a cap on it?
Yeah.
Like a high cap or a low cap?
Oh, this is terrible. If you're still listening,
thank you so much.
We
seriously, this is a really interesting topic.
It is. What's
interesting about it? What is the debate? Maybe we should lay that out first.
Yeah. So basically what this bill does is it's identical to one that died at the end of the last legislative session. And it allows people who already have wells on their property to repair or replace them without a new permit. So people that want this bill say that it provides security for agricultural businesses that use these wells. They don't have to worry about losing their rights to have a well on their property if they need to repair it or build a new one because the old one is old and not working anymore. But then people who are opposed to it say that it's going to allow these well licenses to exist in perpetuity and that wells are really damaging to groundwater and the wells are going to deplete the lakes and rivers. And so that's kind of the 40,000 feet view of yay, nay, what's going on.
And we're not, when you're talking about wells, these aren't like the wells that'd be in somebody's backyard or like the well that little Timmy fell down in Lassie.
Right.
You know,
this is not Lassie's
current
well.
Reference.
These
this
are
is like Lassie's
high,
well on steroids.
But what's a high capacity well? I mean, what are we talking about here?
What is a high capacity well? A high capacity well pumps 70 gallons of water in a minute and more than 100,000 gallons in a day.
That's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water.
And so they're primarily being used by
like
vegetable
large,
growers,
yep, vegetable farms,
dairy farms, and some municipalities mm-hmm. too are using high capacity wells.
Other industry uses them, but this farmers were a big constituency at this hearing that I covered. Lots of large scale farms. So fun fact.
So where's the conflict? Why can't we just give them these wells, right? They're saying,
we want these wells in perpetuity. I should be able to well some water.
Any problem with that? We need to irrigate our crops or we won't be able to sell potatoes to Lay's or whoever. You know?
Which I think is a verbatim quote from the hearing. Not really.
No.
But there was a potato guy, right? I think it was like a potato farmer.
You quoted a potato guy.
I quoted a potato guy from
Inigo. You say a potato guy. Pretty big farmer, you know.
Yeah.
He's a businessman
Yes.
who happens to grow potatoes.
Right. Right. Potatoes are his trade.
It's fitting that we're talking about this on St. Patty's Day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Aw.
I'm wearing green.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew. But this guy, you know, and others argued that their businesses really couldn't continue to exist unless they have access to these wells. You know, they were saying things like you can lose a crop in a day if the weather's not cooperating. You really need to have these at your disposal in modern agriculture. And if they can't rely on the fact that they can keep the well that they have or repair the well that they have, their business could essentially, in, you know, their argument, disintegrate.
Why do cows need these wells?
This was my favorite fun fact. And I like forced Central Time to listen to this yesterday too, because I just find it so fun. I don't know. It's like the vision of it
or
something.
Is it for cow baths?
Yeah, it's not for cow baths. It's to mist them. So in the summer when cows get hot, they use the water from the wells and they mist the cows to keep them cool so they produce milk. So they're happy cows. Isn't that just like the greatest image? Like a line of cows getting like misted. It makes you think of it music festivals. Like you go in and you stand under the mist because it's hot.
I think I've missed that at music festivals.
Oh, it's a thing. It's a thing. But so I guess I'm just picturing the cows in like flower crowns and
listening
Lollapalooza
to like
t-shirts.
Chance the Rapper and
right.
like getting really into it.
Uh-huh. But yeah, that's your fun fact for the day. High capacity wells are used to mist cows. On occasion.
So then what's on the other side of the argument? Basically, hey guys, you're using all of our water.
Yeah, I mean, that's it kind of in a nutshell. People are saying that high capacity wells deplete groundwater. They're going to cause lakes to lower, rivers to lower. And this will have an impact not only on people who just live on lakefront property and use the lakes and rivers for their own personal enjoyment, but kind of an industry argument here is that it's going to hurt the tourism industry in Wisconsin because people like to come here and use our lakes and rivers. And if they don't exist anymore, people might not be so interested.
Yeah, I guess that's... No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that's interesting to me about this particular boomerang issue, and maybe one of the reasons that it is a boomerang bill, is because it doesn't necessarily like fall along the same partisan lines that you might normally expect, where it's like, say, business versus conservation or environmental groups. There's like people on both sides of the issue, constituents in swing districts, they're saying, well, we care about water. We care about business. We also care about water. It's not just like business versus tree-hugging, environmental, liberal, whatever stereotype you want to draw there.
Yeah, that matchup, business versus a straight business versus environmental group matchup on many of the issues that have come through the legislature since Republicans took control of state government, they've tilted toward what business wanted. On most of those. And this is one where it's just particularly an issue in the Central Sands region of Wisconsin. And you've got legislators there, Scott Krug, a Republican representative, is one who comes to mind, who are getting an earful from their constituents, who are a bit freaked out by how much water these high-capacity wells are drawing down there. And, you know, they point to these lakes and streams and they say, look, that is going down because of this heavy water draw for these businesses, and that at some point we have to tell them no. Mm-hmm. And so they have wanted this comprehensive, complicated, really, high capacity wells regulatory system that's really specific to that region too. That's hard to pass. So the bill that Scott Fitzgerald is sponsoring in the Senate, and this has passed the Senate before, is a little simpler. I believe, you know, it's more that it more says, if you got a well, you can keep it. and you pass that permit on if you sell the property. It's pretty simple, and it definitely sides with business, I'd say.
It has nothing to do with new wells. This bill is only wells that are already in existence. Which is, I'm just reiterating what you just said, really.
No, that's like, okay. I was listening.
As well, in, like, he threw something out and then and I was it like, came
yeah.
Back.
Hey, look at that. He's right. Just like doing the alley-oop.
Boomerang.
Yeah.
Boomerang.
Didn't you say before we walked in here, though, that something happened between when this boomerang was thrown out the last time and when it came swooping back in?
So this is one where I would say the issue has changed for this issue. Okay, the issue has changed for this issue. That's brilliant right there.
It's audio gold.
No, but where this bill is coming before this legislature under different circumstances this time because of something Wisconsin's attorney general did. And I think, Laurel, if you're listening to that committee hearing, you heard this Lake Beulah decision get
yes.
brought up a number of times. And that's where our state Supreme Court, despite its conservative leanings, issued a decision that environmental groups were very happy with. And it's essentially said that when it comes to groundwater is, you know, governed by Wisconsin's public trust doctrine. You know, it says that the waters of the state belong to the public, shall remain forever free. And that when you consider whether to site a high capacity well, you have to consider the cumulative impact. So, you know, maybe I'm a potato farmer and I want to put in my first high capacity well in this area in the Central Sands. And I'm thinking, all right, it's my first one. I want to do it. I want to get my high capacity well. But if you consider the cumulative impacts of that well, the DNR would look around and say, your neighbors all have you're surrounded by these high capacity wells.
You're like okay? The last potato farmer to the game here.
True. It's not a good time to be the last potato farmer to the party. And so they would have to consider the fact that these other wells are drawing down the water table. Issue gets complicated. It gets harder to permit wells. And in that hearing, I was struck by the stats from the DNR, which testified officially for information only. They said, and before Attorney General Brad Schimmel, oh, I didn't talk about A.G. Schimmel's opinion. His attorney, that's the thing.
There's a lot of background here.
So much background.
Yeah.
Thanks for sticking with us.
You got to dredge it all up.
Yeah. Ooh. No, thank you for sticking with us because this is
important. Yeah.
So Attorney General Schimmel issues this opinion, and he's the Attorney General. He's not a court, okay? But he's the Attorney General, and he says, look, this is my advisory opinion. The court obviously didn't consider this regulatory bill the legislature passed later on. And so if the court had considered this bill, they wouldn't have ruled this way. And so I rule that the Lake Beulah decision does not mean what you thought it meant for years, right? And he says that you don't have to consider the cumulative impacts. So DNR, before that decision, had a backlog of 190 applications. Some of those were probably going to be denied. You know, they've been backlogged for 3 years. Some of them, DNR just couldn't, they didn't have the tools they needed to measure whether or not these permits could get granted. Attorney General issues that decision, the backlog disappears. They haven't denied a single application since the AG's opinion in May 10th of last year. So
all of those 190 on the backlog got their permits.
They did, yeah.
All of the ones since then. And it was like 300-something in 2016, wasn't it?
It was 301 applications were approved in 2016. Some context, 139 were approved in 2011. So more of these wells are coming online. More context. Back in 2003, there were about 7,800 total high-capacity wells in the state. 2016, there were 13,000 high-capacity wells. So the number has almost doubled in a little more than a decade.
Mm-hmm.
But so if all this is going on, though, if you know, why is this bill back in front of the legislature again?
Well, I think, you know, the Schimmel opinion was a win for the industry, no doubt. But it is not, that is not a decision by the state Supreme Court. It is not a law passed by the legislature or the governor. It is something that could be undone by a future attorney general, or could be undone by a future legislature governor, or perhaps this issue finds its way to the court again, and the court says, actually, we meant what we said. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. And so these farms that are putting a lot of money into these wells, they want a law that says they can keep them. And it's going to continue to be an issue because people are still going to need water, and they're still going to be mad if their lakes are drying up. And so, you know, they're still in the Central Sands. People are going to be mad about this, honestly. It's one of those issues that gets people mad.
So this is an example of a boomerang bill that keeps coming back because the majority party can't quite seem to agree on what to do, and the issue is really complicated. What about bills that keep coming back because the minority party just keeps introducing them over and over again, almost knowing that they're not going to go anywhere, but they still want to get their message out there?
I would say if you're a Democrat in the Wisconsin legislature, you are introducing almost exclusively boomerang bills. Huh?
Yeah, I would say that's
maybe
fair
not 100% of the time, but there's a pretty good chance if you're introducing a bill that is, you know, near and dear to your Democratic heart, throw it out there. You can bank on it coming back, and you can throw it out there next session. It's the way it's gone so far. So, I mean, we got some examples this week. The Democrats introduced their agenda at a state capitol news conference, Peter Barca and Jen Schilling. And I don't know, Laurel and I looked at this list, and we had different reactions. I looked at this list, and I said, there's no bills here. There's no actual proposals here. And Laurel looked, and she saw kind of what they were getting at.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what jumped out at you?
Well, I mean, the first little bullet we have here is secure equal pay protections, greater workforce flexibilities, and a fair living wage. So I think when Sean saw this, he just saw, admittedly, like, it was legit to see this, it was just kind of like wide-ranging, overarching themes. Whereas when I saw that, I mean, Democrats have introduced a bill about equal pay for women.
Right. So we probably know what they're getting at with that one.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a bill. That's a thing. We've got another one down here that's about tax fairness, I think.
Yeah, that one.
Somewhere down here.
I don't know what that one means.
Well, we do. There is a bill from Representative Chris Taylor from Madison who introduced a new kind of tax, basically tax reform that would tax the wealthy at a much higher rate. That's not, as far as we know, a Democratic Party plan. That's just kind of her.
Not a boomerang bill. That's a new bill.
That's a new bill.
It could quickly turn into one that comes right back.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, if circumstances don't change, that's a boomerang. But they didn't, you know, just quick side note, Barca and Schilling wouldn't say, oh, yeah, we signed on to Chris, you know, we support that.
Yeah.
So that's one where it's kind of, a concept more than a bill.
And so maybe, like, aside from the specifics of what they're throwing out there and then catching, you know, a few months later, what's sort of the political calculus here? I mean, I assume generally probably these are actually issues that they care about and feel their constituents care about, but also what's going on in their head when they introduce this stuff, knowing that it's probably not even going to come up for a vote?
Well, okay. I mean, I remember a time when Republicans were introducing stuff like this back when Jim Doyle was governor, and you know, Republicans would introduce this plan as like a tax break for health savings accounts was one that comes to mind. That was a boomerang bill. And a voter ID bill, that was a boomerang bill for Republicans.
Voter ID was a boomerang bill?
It was totally. Voter ID used to be a boomerang bill before it was a law. Okay? And then they took power.
A baby boomerang bill.
Back in the day, it was just a boomerang bill. And they took power, and everybody, because these issues had been out there so long, health savings accounts, one of the first things that Scott Walker signed, was one of his first bills. And voter ID was signed that summer, I think. You know, it was just taken as a given because they had had it out there so long that when we get into power, we're going to do this. And so Democrats, you know, while power in state government is something that eludes them right now, and, you know, is, I'm not saying that's going to change immediately, but if it does, They got these issues lined up. And so essentially they're putting these out there not because, like, they're not kidding themselves, I don't think, thinking, gosh, maybe this will be the session this one passes, right? They're putting it out there as an alternative to Republicans.
You
elect us, this is the
kind
of stuff we
want
to do. Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe one day down the line we'll have the power to turn these boomerangs into
frisbees
or footballs.
I think frisbees.
Kick them through the field goal.
You throw it out there.
And it flies free and proud.
And a dog catches it.
Yeah.
Or it hits someone in the teeth.
I think another couple interesting boomerang bills that we know that are coming back this session, the fetal tissue bill is a boomerang bill, isn't it? That's been out before.
Yeah, that one's been around, definitely.
Yeah, which would ban the use of aborted fetal tissue in scientific research.
A boomerang bill because you have a conflict between the anti-abortion lobby, which is very important to the Republican coalition, and the business lobby, which opposes that bill. So that can create a boomerang bill when
you've got two constituencies. What's the opposition there from the business lobby? Like, it'll hurt
biotech
research.
Yeah. Some of these companies use that research, and so they have come out against it.
Yeah, and that's back, and it has been slightly tweaked this year, which I think happens with boomerang bills. Occasionally, they come back like slightly different with hopes that they'll make it.
Whittle away at the boomerang just a little bit. Like,
or like
put a
new gloss of paint on it. You know, maybe we'll try like a stripey boomerang bill this time. Or like a polka dot boomerang.
Does that affect the way it flies if it's got
different
paint?
I kind of want to get a boomerang for my office now.
Yeah, seriously.
I've tried throwing them. It never goes well for me.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not super
coordinated. I got
to
come back once.
Really?
Yeah, but like I was too scared to catch it, so I like ducked behind
like
a fence.
Flying at me.
And it just like smacked a fence right where I was.
Aww. Oh, cool.
What was another boomerang bill I was going to bring up? Fetal tissue and then, the transgender bathroom bill I think is officially a boomerang bill.
Yeah, I think that qualifies. Although it's only been back like a couple sessions. This is the first session back, right?
Yeah. So it's just barely
maybe
a boomerang.
Barely, yeah.
Maybe it's just a frisbee and the wind blew it back towards us. We're not sure if it's flying back on its own volition.
Mm. True.
Ooh, guns in the classroom, you know, guns at university campuses. Mm-hmm. That's got boomerang potential. They may pass that this year. I don't know.
Yeah, that would allow guns in buildings on university campuses because they're currently allowed on campus but not inside buildings.
And you know, the best place for boomerang bills is the budget.
Ah,
you
the
got
budget.
This thing.
I thought you were going to say
the
like
budget?
The college quad.
I don't see anybody throwing boomerangs out there. Hacky sacks? Do they still do hacky sacks?
No, but I feel like they should. I want to bring that back.
Yeah, it'll come back. Give it time. No, the budget's a great place for boomerang bills because you got a bill that's hard to pass. You know, people don't really have the votes. You put it in a bill that the legislature has to pass.
You just slide it right on in there.
And you get it out of committee, and man, then you just make the argument, if you're a legislator who didn't like that boomerang bill, say, well, you know, I didn't like it, but I had to pass the budget. You know, there was too much other good stuff in there. And that's...
Can't miss the forest for the trees here, guys.
Right.
But to get it in the budget...
I mean,
That's not an easy thing to do, to get your boomerang bill into the budget, right?
I don't know. I've never been on that side of it. Yeah. I mean, I know some bills come back again and again. They're often tucked into that motion that the Joint Finance Committee passes on the last day of deliberations.
The infamous, you know,
thing comes out
it,
at
like
4
the,
in the morning. They do it. They call it Motion 999 for some reason.
That
like
sounds
they want to
so
call attention to the fact that
it?
They're doing that. It's
that
odd that
like
they give
Bon
Iver, it the same
number to me. Sounds like a Bon Iver song title.
Motion 999.
It is with
like some periods and hyphens in there.
And the O's in motion are zeros.
Yeah.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
And Sean Johnson is our Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is our Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd. Boomerang, boomerang, boomerang.
we hope you will keep coming back for more episodes. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also rate and review the show there. You can find it on Google Play and a bunch of podcatching apps. And of course, everything we've ever done is available at wpr.org/politics.